I should have persuaded you to reject what was happening.
I slide my palm from his chest, down over his six-pack abdomen, trailing my fingers lightly over his velvety skin. You didn't throw me away. You did the hardest thing possible. Sacrificed your own desires for my best interests. Trying to keep me here, almost completely black, unable to ever use my power again, would have destroyed us both. Neither of us is wired that way. We push the limits, we adapt. It's what we do.
And my illusion offers absolution,
he says with a snort.
I am getting better at this.
I drop onto his lap, slinging my legs one over each side of the chair, and take his face in my hands, stare into his beautiful eyes, fire and ice, blood and steel. Do I feel like an illusion to you? My dress is hitched up nearly to the top of my thighs. I lower myself, slowly, firmly against him. He's hard. He's so fucking hard. And I'm so fucking painfully alive and starved to have him inside me. I don't need foreplay, not this time. I just need it done. Him in me, over and over. Maybe the next time I get to be human we'll bother with foreplay. Maybe I'm not much of a foreplay kind of woman. His hands close on my waist tightly, fingers digging in with anger, with grief.
You'll never do. I've spent hours touching you, holding you, days fucking you in my mind.
I say lightly, do it again. But it's me. I get to be a woman half the time, dragging the other half. Still, I only have a week. You really helped me change so I could come back and tell you I was okay. Spend time with you until I learn to transform myself.
That's the most lucid, coherent explanation you've offered yet,
he says dryly, gaze fixed on my lips. Because it's the true one. Kiss me. See how real I am. I drop forward, brush my lips to his, and my hands are at the top of his sweats, and I'm so damned wet it's glistening on my thigh. He inhales sharply, pulls back, glances down. Then his hand is on my thigh, and he's tracing the slick heat up my leg. He groans.
I don't recall it ever being quite this real. Fuck.
Yes, please, I say with a half-laugh, half-growl. Now. Then he's surging to his feet, and he's pushing me back on the floor on a thick fur rug, and I'm sprawling with my legs spread and his mouth is on my thigh as he shoves my dress up over my hips. Then his mouth closes, warm and wet between my legs, and he's licking and sucking, and I hear someone screaming and realize it's me, and holy hell, orgasm for me is a full mind-body explosion. My brain flies open and shatters into starry pieces, and my body is electrified, and I buck against his face as I writhe beneath him. Then I'm surging up, still coming, desperate to get him inside me, because I've come too many times by my own hand thinking of him, and this is real, and I want it all. And I'm launching myself on top of him, shoving him back to the floor and slamming down on him with violence and lust and need. And his eyes are flying wide and flashing blood red as he snarls.
Fuck, you're real.
I have no idea what convinced him, and I don't care. And I throw my head back and half laugh, half roar, as I take Riordan Killian St. James inside me and clench every muscle in my lower body that I'm so bloody grateful to have. And I don't have to be careful with him because I can never break this man in any way, and I can vibrate.
Bloody hell, woman, don't do that yet.
But he's on his back beneath me, and I'm riding him, and I'm in control, and I'm vibrating, and God damn, yes, he's losing control. And this is the only way I ever want to see this man lose his hold on reality.
Paybacks are hell,
he snarls as he explodes inside me. And all I could think is, I hope so. I hope he pays me back over and over again my entire immortal life. Then he's shuddering, and his head is back, and he's laughing up at me as he comes, and I cup his face, that beautiful, sexy, familiar, challenging, stubborn human skin poured over a beast face I will never tire of looking at. And I catch his joy in my hands and it blazes inside my heart. Later, I thumb up Magic Man on my cell phone and crank up the volume. Later, I dance naked for him in the firelight, and I tell him that I know it's not a spell, but it's truth that this woman-child dragon has been waiting for him all her life. Exaltation blazes in his eyes. As he takes me down to the floor, and he gets the top this time, the bastard. And he tells me something I file away, but don't ask about just then, because my mouth is busy, and I like it being busy in precisely that way. He tells me he's been waiting for me much longer than a lifetime. I have no idea what he means. I don't care. He's inside me, and I'm inside him, and the future is as vast and enormous as the starry skies that are half the time my home now. Much later, I demand to know what happened at the Abbey, and he tells me that Kat and the Shedon survived, but we lost 142 She-Seers that day. I'd indeed killed Baylor with my final blast, and after I'd vanished, Riordan scratched a long chafing itch. Papa Roach was dead, slain at last by that lethal black blade Riordan had been threatening him with for so long. Oz was in the battle too, but escaped and lived to torment us another day. Still, I was back. I was powerful, and one day, that cooing little leprechaun would be mine. Roisin had joined the women at the Abbey, although she had no She-Seer gifts, and was working with Enyo, recruiting other displaced, disenfranchised humans, moulding them into an army, giving them purpose, a cause to fight for, a raison d'être. God knows we can all use one at times like these. Mac and Barons were still gone. No sign of the Fae in our city for months. Yet I knew, although neither of us said it.
Fuck that,
Riordan says tightly.
I'll say it, and we'll print it in the Dublin Daily, because the world needs to know and prepare. Our greatest battle is yet to come. It'll be the Fae, not the old gods. Those bastards are going to turn our world into a war zone, and soon. There's a scarce contained violence in the earth. I feel it rumbling beneath my boots. A darkness on the wind. I can scent blood on the breeze. They're planning, conspiring to seize this planet for their own. War's coming, and if Mac doesn't gain control of her power, it's one we'll lose.
Then we need to make sure Mac has enough time. He growls assent. Any news of Christian?
Same. Kat's been spending time at Driacht Keep, working on Sean. Still no progress there. He destroys every living thing he touches.
People? I gasp. I know the horror of that.
No. As famine, it's only living plants and crops. People and animals are exempt. Those are Christian's specialty.
Any trouble from other gods?
Not yet. But I suspect we've only seen the tip of the iceberg there. Humans and gods will have to unite to have a chance against the Fae.
Somehow, I vow silently, we'll make that happen. Brightside, we now have a hunter on our side. And who knows, maybe I can rustle up reinforcements. He laughs.
If anyone can persuade the unpersuadable entities, it's you.
Then he's on me again, and we're battling for dominance, because we always will. That's the way we're wired, and I lose myself in passion, and think no longer of this world, or anything in it. He's my ground zero, my mecca, beast to my dragon, always.
When I was 14 years old, I watched Riordan having sex on level 4 at Chester's, the subclub devoted to providing the carnal excess necessary to keep the Nine's beasts under control. I smile faintly. I'm Riordan's carnal excess now. That day, so long ago, I marked him as mine. There it is. The truth. Crucify me for it if you want. I don't care. I was never a normal 14-year-old. I've never been a normal anything. At 14, I'd vowed one day I'd be the woman making him laugh, making joy blaze from his face. So tangible it seemed I might catch it in my hands. I would trace the imperious, regal, stubble-shadowed planes of his face, close my hand around his cock, and take him inside me. I'd be the one responsible for the firestorm of lust in his heavy-lidded gaze, for the savage rumble deep in his chest, the guttural raw sounds he made when he came, half-roar, half-laughing, erotic purr. Not with my 14-year-old body. I wasn't ready for sex then. But one day, with a woman's body, the man was mine. It wasn't just lust I'd felt the afternoon I'd watched him fuck. And yes, I'd been capable of lust at that age. For life, for the sex I would one day have, for chocolate, for being alive. I'm made of lust. We all are. Savor it, burn with it, never apologize for it. It's what makes life worth living. I know a truth. We fuck like we live. Timid people fuck timidly. Uninhibited people fuck uninhibitedly. He'd fucked with 1,000% focus, with savage devotion and lust. Staggeringly alive. Elated to be. It's the way I've always lived. Fully engaged, all senses ablaze. I recognized that day that he and I were the same kind of people. I hadn't thought to ever find someone else in the world like me. I'd been wandering the city on my own for 6 years by then. I'd seen and done far more than any child should. When I think of Ray, I know how wrong my life was, and I'll do everything in my power to keep her childhood pure. Not that Kat needs my help, but I'll be there, watching over her. Always. I'd paid prices few adults ever have to pay. I'd carried sins that cut me to the core of that soul I used to pretend I didn't have. Sins that had forced me to find creative ways of rearranging myself so I wouldn't self-destruct. Ancient eyes had stared out of my 14-year-old face at Riordan, and I'd thought, this man will understand me. This man can withstand me. That's something for a woman of my complicated ilk. He's a pain in the ass. Stubborn, controlled, controlling. So am I. He's done unspeakable things. So have I. And I suspect we'll easily speak about them with each other. He's fascinating. Brilliant. Hungry for more life all the time. So am I. He's life and death, joy and grief, mercy and ruthlessness. So am I. It was hard for me to move through those years between us. I resisted what I knew I wasn't ready for. I resented every woman he took to his bed in a dark, possessive corner of my mind, including Joe, even though I understood. Then life unexpectedly gave me a man I was ready for. And Riordan had understood. But always, endlessly, I'd been pointed at this man like a beast-seeking missile, waiting for the day I was not merely locked and loaded, but fully ready to take him on, woman to man. That's what Dancer had always sensed in me, and loved me anyway. I think both my loves are better men than I. I can't share. I can't be second best. I don't know how to play that role.
You'll never have to,
Riordan assures me as he closes his arms around me from behind and grinds hard and hungry against my ass. You should know I'm possessive. His arms tighten around me.
As am I. You and me. No one else. If you're not okay with that, get the fuck out of my bed,
he says, as he begins pushing slowly inside me. I gasp and thrust my hips back, needing to feel him cramming me full, like earlier when he'd been a part beast, so deep it nearly hurt in the best possible way. I'm not a woman to compare, We all bring unique assets to the table, but Riordan's assets fit me stupendously well, and the fact that they were adjustable, well, that was a plus a woman had no reason to expect and every reason to thank her lucky stars for. He laughs softly against my ear as he slides infinitesimally deeper, breaking my nerves with a savage need he's creating and refusing to fill, driving me mad.
I suspect the stars will always be lucky for you, Danny.
Growling, I push back, hard, but his hands are locked on my hips and he won't let me gain a bloody quarter of an inch.
Let me play, Stardust. Learn what turns you on. I want to drive you wild. I want to find your breaking points, all of them.
That makes two of us. Although I never want to see him lose control in the real world, I hunger to strip it from him in bed. 1 inch, then gone, rubbing between my legs, where I'm swollen and achingly wet. Then 2 inches inside me, then gone, and back, and slow. So slow, I nearly scream with frustration as he eases into me as if we had all the time in the world.
We do.
Laughter explodes from me. Pure joy. Eternity. I get to love this man forever.
Fuck, Danny, stop laughing.
Afraid you'll lose control? I tease and laugh again, a husky, wicked sound as I kicked it up a notch and began to vibrate from head to toe.
Son of a bitch.
Later, I sprawl on top of him, staring into glittering, lazily sated silver eyes. It's a good thing the room was already wrecked, because we'd have wrecked it anyway. I have no idea how much time has passed down here, where no light of day penetrates, but I'm willing to bet we've spent 24 straight hours exploring each other's bodies, testing limits, discovering what drives each other wild. And this man is definitely wild, hot and sexy, and just the flavor of kink I like. I've only got 1 week, I remind him softly. He stiffens and growls as I fill him in on all that happened, explaining the parameters of my new existence. His silver eyes blaze with joy.
Half the time we'll be human. The other half we'll be beasts together,
he says, laughing softly.
What a fine fucking life.
Indeed. Still, something's bothering me. I need to know why he thought I wasn't coming back. What Uriel did with my text. Riordan, didn't you get my message? I sent you...
A bloody chunk of a star. Christ, that damned piece of rock has been the bane of my fucking existence.
So he did get it. It was meant to set your mind at ease.
Your aim sucked, Stardust.
He growls. He rolls me off him. Surges to his feet, stalks to the hearth where he collects something from a box on the floor and brings it back, handing it to me. I peer at it in the low light and gasp. It says, I'm okay, I'm... But that's only half of it.
I bloody well know that. What the fuck is the end of that sentence? You have no idea how many words I plugged in. I'm okay, I'm happy. I'm okay. I'm free. I'm okay. I'm never coming back. What the fuck, Danny?
I turn the chunk of star over and study the edge. It broke. It must have hit something on the way to you. Where were you when you got it?
On a beach.
I frown. A beach? You went to the beach? Lore said he'd not come out of Chester's since I left.
I used to walk the ocean at night. It plunged from the sky and landed next to me.
When? He laughs, but there's a deep undercurrent of bitterness, a hint of torment in it.
Woman, you have driven me crazy far longer than you know. I got your bloody damned star 3,141 years, 5 months, 9 days, and 2 hours before you turned into a hunter at the Abbey.
I gasp. 3,000 years ago? What was Uriel thinking? Was her aim that bad? Was manipulating time trickier than she'd cared to admit?
You're the reason I began to study linchpin theory over 3 millennia ago. You're the reason I began trying to project the future. You, Daniel Malley, have been the greatest and most irritating mystery of my existence. I smelled you on the star that night on the beach, the scent of a woman I hungered to know, unlike any woman I'd ever met. I waited to meet her, and waited, and bloody fucking waited. Found her one night in Dublin, an uncontrollable, swaggering child with a bloody death wish, balls of steel, a superhero complex, and a teenage boyfriend.
Oh, God. You knew I was the one who'd thrown the star when you saw me that night?
I'd given up on the whole matter long ago. Decided the star was the equivalent of a text message sent to the wrong phone. Then I moved in behind you that night and smelled your scent. I knew you were her, the one who would one day throw a star at me across time. My world went to hell from that moment on. I had no idea what you were or what to do with you. I only knew one day you'd toss a bloody celestial body my way. Admit it, you never wrote any more than that. I tortured you so much, you decided to torture me back for a few thousand years.
I burst out laughing. If I'd thought of it, I might have.
That was all I had to go on. Then when you began to turn black...
That's why you were so certain I was becoming a hunter, I exclaim. Because they live among the stars. He inclines his head. Why didn't you tell me? He's silent a long moment, then exhales gustily.
It was mindfuck to an extreme. I was concerned I might change things.
Illogical, if it...
Already happened. Yes, it would, no matter what. I thought of that, too. Barons and I discussed it endlessly.
Barons knew?
My brother is the only one I told. I've learned to take nothing for granted in this world.
He's silent again, then says...
I'd begun to suspect that, because of my feelings for you, I'd try to sabotage whatever might happen. I questioned my motives.
I still, as the enormity of what he is telling me sinks in. From the day he met me, he'd known I would one day throw a star at him. No wonder he hadn't thought I was human. Then once I started turning hunter, he'd known the what of it, but not how things would end. He'd not known, even as I branded him, even as he encouraged me to embrace my destiny, if he would ever see me again. Still, he helped me through it.
No cages, Danny. Ever. Not for you. It was possible being a hunter would be everything you wanted. It was possible the final word was happy. If it had happened then, it was supposed to happen, and the only thing I could do was be there while it happened. I thought I'd lost you forever. The moment you turned, I could no longer feel you. I thought your star was your goodbye.
Never, I say swiftly. It was my promise to you that I was returning, to set your mind at ease. Because I didn't call you for those 2 years, and I should have. I wasn't going to make the same mistake again. I wasted those 2 years because I was stubborn and proud, and kept boxing my emotions instead of admitting them. That I loved you. I've always loved you.
So what the fuck did it say? Imagine working a crypto quip for 3,000 bloody years and never solving it.
I'm okay. I'm coming home.
Is this Danny?
He says quietly.
Home? Will you live here with me?
Always. Well, half the time. The other half of the time.
Bloody hell. I'm going with you when you go.
As high as I can take you without killing you, I promise. We would sail the night sky together, watch over our city, our friends and family.
I might surprise you,
he says, smiling faintly.
I don't need to breathe, Danny. Not all the time. Besides, I always come back.
I cup that beautiful face and kiss him. Long and deep. I always will, too. That's our number one rule, Raiden. No matter what, we will always come back to each other.
A rule I'll never break.
He flashes me a wolfish grin.
All the others are up for grabs. You'll have to keep me in line. I'm not an easy man to handle.
I know that already. It's one of the things I like most about him. I'm still having a hard time wrapping my brain around the fact that he'd been waiting over 3,000 years for me. Something about the length of time he'd been waiting teases at my brain. Wait a minute. How long was it again from the time you got my star and I turned into a hunter?
3,141 years, 5 months, 9 days, and 2 hours.
He says flatly.
Wondered when you'd notice that.
I stare at him. Ryadin. That's pi.
The first 7 digits of it. It was the hope I held on to, that we would somehow get all the rest of those digits too.
I'm stupefied. Dancer was right. There's pattern and purpose to everything. This spectacular universe knew exactly what it was doing. We will, I say, smiling up at him. I can feel it in my hunter bones. An eternity with this man was all I'd ever wanted. Whatever comes, whatever challenges we face, we'll ride them out together. It will be intense. It'll be dangerous. It'll be unpredictable. But it will never be dull. Not with him. As he surges above me, stretching his big, beautiful body over mine, I let go of everything, sprawl back, and tell him in great detail exactly what I want him to do. He complies with 1,000% devotion to the task at hand, as I lay back and take what I want, understanding finally that I deserve to, that I don't have to be super anything to be loved. Cages were funny things. Although I'd escaped with my body long ago, only recently had my heart finally broken free. Healed by the love of a man who'd been willing to sacrifice everything, even give me up if he had to, just to see me rise.
39. Uriel chuckled as her daughter disappeared into Chester's, racing to the arms and bed of the man she'd chosen for her, when she tied the first of many red threads in Danny's life. Uriel had broken Ryadin's star in half, sent him only, "I'm okay, I'm," to determine if he was worthy of her daughter. She'd sent it to him far in the past, to ascertain if he would be there to watch over her, and to assess what he was made of. He'd passed her tests with flying colors, helping her daughter evolve, even as he'd believed he was losing her, giving his love with no guarantee of a return. Tucking her wings close to her body, Uriel soared up into the sky above Dublin, watching over the city Danny loved, studying what only the most ancient among hunters could see, the countless red threads connecting lives that were destined to make history together. There was pattern and purpose to all things. One day, if she chose, Danny too would fly among the stars, studying worlds and tying those fateful threads. Only those with the purest, deepest, most resilient hearts could handle the delicate task. Her daughter certainly fit the bill, and would excel at weaving happy endings for others. But now, it was time for her to enjoy her own. Epilogue. Let my love open the door to your heart. Somewhere in time. On a planet with low gravity and 4 moons, a black-skinned beast bounded across sandy dunes. He was her best friend and lover. At the beast's side ran a hellcat, both her child and mother. Above them soared a majestic raven dark hunter, forged of passion, fire, and a teaspoon of stardust. Danny O'Malley had a family. She belonged. Deleted scenes. The following scenes were written during Fever Song, but for one reason or another, I either cut and rewrote them a different way, or simply chose not to include them. As my team and I were sorting through my notes, they enjoyed the alternate glimpses so much, I decided to include them here. Deleted Christian McElter scene from Fever Song.
Baron said, "Do you remember All Hallows' Eve when we summoned the old god at the Circle Stones of Bandrocade?" "How could I forget?" Christian replied with a tight smile. "You screwed me, and I got hurled into the Silvers where I turned into this." "I was hurled into the Silvers that night, too. Because of you, I merely escaped more quickly." "And just how did you do that?" Christian said dryly. "Do you recall what I told you before we began the ritual?" "Yes. Not a bloody thing. I told you one thing you needed to remember, and you ignored it. I said, when it rises, greet it with warmth and respect. The foul thing came exploding out of the earth, gunning for me. It was dark and ancient and smelled of bones and graveyards. And I was supposed to smile and say hello? You are dark and will one day be ancient, and you don't merely smell of death. You're the most lethal horseman of the apocalypse. Your legend will forever precede you. Yes, I bloody expected you to be courteous, yet you ran as if it was the vilest thing you'd ever encountered. It responded to you in kind. Our plan that night succeeded. You didn't welcome it. It left. Well, why the hell was the onus on me that night? You attract power." Christian went still. He'd often felt that way as a lad, strolling the bends and vales of his highlands, tethered by a deep bond to all of it, earth to sky, dirt to stars, feeling as if the heavens themselves sometimes shot out a milky tendril to caress him, noticed him, observed him with curiosity. His druid connection to all living things was intense. He'd not even been able to fish as a lad because he couldn't bear the pain of the pierced worm, life stolen by the hook. The worm had enjoyed its dark, sweet, rich life in the soil, comforted by the rhythms and songs of the earth. And now he was the great stealer. "Why do I draw it? You have the potential for great good or evil. The universe notices. Why the bloody hell are you bringing this up now?" Barons always had a reason. He never talked unless he needed to in order to accomplish an aim. "You're about to meet someone. Greet it with warmth and respect. I won't tell you again." Christian stopped in his tracks. "That thing from Samhain is here." "Another of the old earth gods. This one, however, will not run. They will decimate you if you fear them. The old ones can be cantankerous. Your pronouns aren't matching. What the bloody hell is it? One or multiple?" When Baron said nothing, he snapped irritably. "Where the fuck do you even find old gods? It's not as if they're just hanging about on street corners." Baron shot him a look of dark amusement. "You might be surprised. If you were one day summoned by those in need of your services, yet greeted with fear and hostility, what would you do to those who'd called you?" Christian bared his teeth in a twisted smile. If someone dared compel his presence, then treated him with horror and rejection, well, in his recent state of mind, he might do worse than the old god had done. He'd live up to his fucking legend, every frightening bit of it. "Be glad the one that came that night wasn't as bitter and broody as you. All things considered, it was surprisingly well-mannered." Christian narrowed his eyes. "As you've just been. You never explain." "Were they becoming friendly? Was Barons capable of friendly?" "Power is gray. It goes where you will it. Wrong or right. Dark or light. Reviling yourself is the surest way to go dark." Christian bristled but said nothing. The bastard had struck a nerve. Barons didn't know he'd begun hating himself long before he turned unseelie.
when he'd been but a lad, for hearing all those truths no one else could hear, for making those he loved uneasy, for inciting suspicion and fear. But even more shaming to his character, he'd come to revile those around him, to feel contempt for their lies and evasions, their inability to face what they felt. Between despising himself and looking down on others as liars and cowards, he'd grown to adulthood with a serious chip on his shoulder. He'd donned the mask of a carefree, good-looking young Scotsman, but there'd always been a streak of darkness in him, perhaps even repressed sadism, seething anger at his fellow man. Was that why he'd been one of the first to turn Unseelie Prince? Had the evicted magic of the dead prince somehow sniffed it out in him and deemed him a fine fit? Had Fey power targeted him long before that night at Bandrocade, even before Mac fed him Unseelie? He shifted his wings uneasily. Fuck, he had wings. He could fly. He considered that for a moment, looking for the first time past the Unseelie element of it to the simple beauty and power of having wings, the freedom, the strength. But since the day they began to grow, he'd done nothing but bitch about the itch and the pain, the need to clean them, how he could no longer sleep flat on his back. No position was comfortable, and he'd begun to fear like a bat that he might need to hang upside down to get any rest at all. And sure enough, the bloody things hurt most of the time, felt wrong on his body, kept him on constant edge. He canted his shoulders back, expanding his druid essence into the fey appendages as he accepted, nay, welcomed them for the first time. When the world was safe again, he might fly a velvety night sky in the highlands, watch wolves tussle in the moonlight with their cubs, soar beside a grand eagle for a few hours, glide across a silvery loch, tumble to a soft landing in a bed of heather. Bloody hell, he had wings. For the first time since he'd begun to transform into something otherworldly, he felt elation. His wings responded, lifting slightly, fluttering as if with a sigh of pleasure, as if, with the aloofness of a cat, they'd been waiting to be noticed, stroked, appreciated. Heat raced through his body into the strong, sure sails that spread and fanned without conscious thought, the powerful muscles in his shoulders rippling smoothly as they arced high before crossing down again to tuck behind his shoulders in a position he'd never before been able to achieve. Perfectly tucked, precisely where they were made to be. Effortless, neither dragging nor aching. He shook his head with a wry smile. His wings had always known instinctively how to arrange themselves, but his brain had been in the way. He'd been in the way of himself. They'd been a burden because he'd thought them a burden. And now that he thought them a gift, they behaved like a gift. He stole a glance at his companion. If he could learn to like himself and the world around him, barons could learn to have friends. Thanks to Dagus, the Kelter and the Nine were practically bloody married now. They'd become clan in every meaningful sense of the word. Like the Nine, the Kelter had long been insular, secretive, staying intentionally isolated. But the world had changed, and neither band could afford insularity anymore. There were too many risks to them all to shun shared knowledge and power. Christian wanted friends. He'd missed having them as a lad. God damn it. At least he could have peers. Barons cut him an irritated look. What? Don't tell me you can actually hear what I'm thinking, Christian snapped. He wouldn't be surprised. Barons and his men were bizarrely attuned to people's slightest nuances. I endeavor not to, Barons muttered. Sometimes you infernal creatures seem to be holding a bloody megaphone to your brains. What is the god's name? Christian changed the subject swiftly. It would be easier to be courteous if he knew something of whom he was to address. Coulsons. They are the keeper of doorways, of gates and passages, of the underworld itself, standing bastion at all that is liminal. When they can be stirred to bother themselves, Kulsu may be with him. If so, beware her blades. What blades? The ones I just mentioned. Why is Coulson's a they? You'll see. Are they hideous? Christian braced himself for the worst. Barons cut him a mocking look. No more so than they may find you. Well, where are they from? How do you find these old gods? For fuck's sake, shut up! What the bloody hell is wrong with trying to understand my situation? Were you this much of a pain when Mac was trying to figure things out? How did she stand you? She prefers me lying down, on top of her, frequently behind her. You want to keep talking, Highlander? They made their way down the long white corridor in silence. Deleted Christian McKelter scene from Fever Song. I stole a bit of Mac's hair a while back and carry it in my wallet. Yes, death carries a wallet. Funny the things you do to try to normalize yourself. It's not as if anything in that wallet is worth a damn, the way the world is now. But when I slip it into my jeans, I get a vague sensation of being Christian McKelter, of the Clan Kelter, who has a driver's license and credit cards and a picture of my mother and one of me and my childhood sweetheart, Tara, building a fort down by the lock. I don't carry Mac's hair from sentimentality or interest in her, but because with it I can sift to her location whenever, wherever I feel like it, and keeping an eye on that woman is on my list of priorities. I didn't mention this to Barons. He's not the kind of man you tell you carry a lock of his woman's hair. And there's no doubt in anyone's mind that's what she is. Sifting to her location inside Malice's is simple. I touch her hair and let my mind go to that strange cool place I now have that seems to connect to something deeper within the earth than I ever reached with my druid arts, draws upon it, becomes one with it, and I can suddenly step sideways in a way, because space and time no longer function the same for me once I've tapped into whatever it is I'm connected to now. One of these days, I really want to be able to sit down and talk to a born, not made fae and pick its brain about what I can and can't do. Maybe when this is all over and we get a sliver of peace. She's a fright, standing in the middle of an overblown, gothic nightmare of a room. Not because of what she looks like, but because I can feel some kind of dark wind inside her, and for a moment I wonder if Barons lied to me. There's Mac, then there's a shadow within, crouching, so damned hungry, dark, velvety, and utterly seductive. I get a vague impression of enormous charm and charisma. Whatever lurks within her can be beguiling if it wishes. I expand my senses, trying to assess the emotional content of whatever it is and get nothing. Abso-fucking-lutely nothing. The thing that abides inside Baron's rainbow girdle does not feel. At all. Not one ounce. Not one flicker. I can't penetrate past that. If I'd known earlier, when she approached me at the abbey, that she was inhabited by the Shisardu, I might have picked this up. But my expectations colored what I'd perceived. When you don't expect a monster, it's hard to see one. When you know it's there, it becomes so visible you wonder how the bloody hell you ever missed it.
Christian!
She exclaims, then explodes in a staccato fast rush.
What are you doing here? Where's Barons? Is he okay? Did I hurt anyone? What about my parents? Is Jada wearing the cuff? She has to wear the cuff. The ZEWs will get her again otherwise. She's okay, right? I didn't hurt her. Did I kill anyone? Who did I kill?
I narrow my eyes, assaulted by a veritable barrage of emotion. Genuine, unless the Shisardu can fake it to perfection. I relax only slightly, unwilling to make mistakes. I proceed with extreme caution, not getting one inch closer yet. Jada is fine. She's wearing the cuff, and no, Mac, you didn't hurt anyone. You just bloody cocooned us all.
But I had blood and black feathers and...
Tell me you're not currently the Shisardu. I cut her off impatiently. This is the only other test I can perform, and it may or may not be valid, depending on the power of the malevolent book. She stops abruptly, blinks, and then says,
I'm not currently the Shisardu. I think it fell asleep, but you have to contain me with the stones. Now, Christian, while it's not aware, sift me to wherever the stones are and lock my ass down. Do it.
It's my turn to blink. Okay. Either the Shisardu is playing a deep game because it wants the stones, or it's really Mac and she's finally wised up. She locks eyes with me. Tiny little dots of crimson appear in the corners, then vanish.
I know I killed,
she says in a low voice.
And I get that you don't want to tell me. I scrubbed before you came. I know what I must have done to end up that way. Please, Christian, you have to neutralize me.
It's what I came for, lass. I extend my hand. When she rushes toward me, I flinch because I also feel a dark wind rushing at me, a chilling, icy, voracious dark wind that then slices into me even more savagely than the biting wind in the Unseelie prison, chilling my already too cool heart. But she takes my hand and hers is warm. And she doesn't slap any runes on me, so I focus on Chester's and blink us off into that strangely malleable, liminal place the Fae can access, and we're gone. When we reappear in Riordan's office, she says nothing at first, just stands and spins, her face lighting up as she observes Barons, Jada, and Fade. She exhales gustily and seems to relax, like she's taken her first deep breath in a long time. Then she locks gazes with Barons and says nothing for several long moments, and I somehow know they're having an entire conversation without speaking. Christ, the emotion I see, hell, can almost feel in the molecules of air between them. It convinces me like nothing else could that this is really Mac. I observe Barons curiously. Does he feel? Is he capable of it? I can't get a solid read on him, but the abyss that I felt within him previously is abruptly no longer empty. She fills it somehow, and in the filling redefines it, and him. Her face changes then, and she scowls.
I said, who did I kill, Barons? Don't lie to me.
It doesn't matter, he says.
Every life matters.
You killed only Unseelie and a single Shisir.
Who?
She snaps. Barons shrugs. I don't know.
Describe her,
Jada demands. When he does, Jada murmurs.
Marjorie.
To Mac. Mac drops her head and deflates. Barons moves toward her and she stiffens and draws back.
Don't touch me. You have to contain me with the stones. I think it's asleep, but I suspect it won't be long, and I have no idea what will happen then.
Mac, he says softly, I need to touch you so I can get inside.
No,
she snaps.
Lock me down first, then touch me if you want to.
I might not be able to reach you then, he snaps back.
You're gonna have to risk it. I know what the thing is capable of. I feel it inside me. Not right now, but I felt it when it took me. It's... amused by suffering. It feeds on it, thrives on it, draws energy from it. It's beyond sadistic and sick, but it's floundering right now. It's not at its strongest, but it will be soon.
Her head whipped to Jada.
The cuff is what was keeping the ZEWs from being able to find you. Never take it off. I don't know what the book did to the sweeper. It could be out there still. It sent it back in time,
Jada says quickly.
Fuck!
So that part of the legend was true. It can manipulate time.
Mac explodes.
Lock me down, now.
Barron's his honor. He simply vanishes, then reappears with his hands on his shoulders, as if he too can sift. What the fuck are the 9? Rather 10 now. Great Dagus was a handful before. Now he's out there somewhere and able to move like the 9. If he hunts, nothing will see him coming. They both freeze for a long moment, Mac looking up, Barron's looking down. Then she says softly,
"You'll figure something out. This won't be permanent. Or maybe I'll figure something out, but you have to do it. I can't guarantee that if I kill myself, it won't simply jump to another body. Please, Jericho, don't let me kill anyone else. I don't want to live with the death of people I love on my conscience. I don't want to live with the fate of the world on it. I can't. This is the only way, and you know it."
"Hush," he says softly and closes his eyes.
"Jericho, don't,"
she says.
"I don't know what it might do to you. Don't go inside me after it."
"Fucking trust me to be able to survive."
"I can't carry your death,"
Mac says.
"It would turn me into the same kind of monster that inhabits me. Once before, I was willing to destroy the world just to get you back."
He opens his eyes and a faint smile curves his lips. "I know," he says, dark eyes glittering.
"That is not a good thing,"
she hisses. "In my book it is." "Well, it's bloody well not in mine," I growl. "You heard her. Barons, give us the stones. If he doesn't, I'll be on him in seconds. Take them from him." They ignore me. Jada stands, watching them with apparent fascination. "Fucking try to relax, Mac," Barons growls. "Let go. You've got walls up. Drop them," he demands. He opens his eyes, his dark gaze boring down into hers. She locks her jaw and stares stubbornly up. "Mac," he says softly. Then his eyes say something to her I can't read, but whatever it was, her lips curve with a slow smile of delight.
"I thought you didn't believe in words,"
she says with a husky laugh. "I believe in you, and sometimes you're so obtuse I'm forced to resort to them. Let me in." With a soft sigh, she closes her eyes and goes limp against him, melding their bodies together. And that's when all hell breaks loose.
Deleted Mac Riordan scene from Fever Song.
"She kissed me. She wanted..."
He trailed off. I shot him a venomous look. "Tell me you did not have sex with Danny."
"Of course I didn't,"
he growled. I said indignantly, "Well, why not? What's wrong with Danny? You sleep with everyone else." He gave me a blank look that turned instantly to annoyance.
"You don't get to have it both ways, Mac. You can't be pissed at me because you think I did it, then get pissed at me because I didn't. What the fuck's with that?"
"It's the principle of the thing," I said, scowling. "Danny shouldn't be sleeping with you, at least not now. But how dare you reject my girl? She's the best thing you could ever hope to get."
"You think I don't know that?"
Then he said softly,
"She's a virgin."
"Oh, thank God." A knot I hadn't even been aware of in my stomach loosened. I'd been so afraid she'd had it taken from her as a child, or taken from her silver side, or given it away as coolly and impersonally as a porn star. "Wait," I said, scowling again. "So that's the only reason you didn't?"
"I had a lot of fucking reasons. I told you she was a virgin because I thought you'd want to know. Figured I wasn't the only one worried about what might have happened, Silverside. The meltdown at the Abbey about Shazam made me think she might have had a child."
I softened. "Oh. So how did it end up between you two? My darling Danny. She'd gotten rejected first time out of the gate. I hated that. I didn't want her to ever be rejected. Why on earth did she have to pick Riordan? When she'd first come back as Jada, I could have seen it. But she wasn't that icy woman anymore. And the more she thawed, the younger she appeared. I groaned, understanding her motive. She always said she wanted her first time to be epic. That's why she wanted you. None of her other options were available. Barron's was out of the running, and Vlaine turned out to be Cruz. He snapped.
None of her other... Wait, she wanted to give her virginity to Barron's? She said that?
I shrugged. She was a teenager.
Barron's and Danny would never work,
he said tightly. Nobody said they would. That would be as wrong as me and you. Ew. He bristled.
What the bloody hell is wrong with me?
And there you are, I said. See? You don't want to have sex with me, but it sure burns when I reject you. He shot me an icy look.
You didn't reject me. I wasn't offering. But if I felt like it, I could change your mind.
Oh, God. Men. Sometimes there was nothing else you could say. Barron's growled low in his throat.
Not that I want to,
Raiden said hastily.
Or would ever want to.
Barron's growled again.
Christ, let's just end this conversation,
Raiden said tightly.
It's going nowhere. Let's.
Barron's agreed. Let's not, I said. How did it end with you and Danny? I pressed, worried for her.
I left. That's how the fuck it ended. I got out of there as fast as I could.
So you don't know where she went? I needed to find her, talk to her, see if I could help with her bruised pride or feelings or whatever she was going through now. I said to Barron's, I'm going to sift to her and see how she is. Raiden stiffened, sucking in a harsh breath.
Oh, fuck. Don't.
He growled, turning his back to me, hands fisting at his sides. Don't tell me what to...
Don't sift to her. Your timing would be terrible.
I stared at him. His back was ramrod straight, and he shuddered. He turned and shot Barron's an unreadable look, crammed so full of an unfathomable conversation, and I desperately wanted an interpretation. Barron's went still, closed his eyes, and rubbed them. What's going on? I said softly. Without opening his eyes, Barron's murmured,
Danny is having sex.
My gaze whipped back to Raiden. You can feel that because of the brand on her neck? Raiden said nothing, just stood there like he'd been turned to stone, nostrils flaring, eyes sparking crimson, his fangs extended, protruding from his mouth. My gaze shot back to Barron's, and I was just about to speak when he said to Raiden,
You knew when you tattooed her what it would do to you. You knew the price.
What price? I demanded.
She went straight from me to him,
Raiden said, nearly inaudibly. Him who? I practically shouted.
Her fucking kid genius,
he hissed. I couldn't help but smile. She was with Dancer. That was the epic I'd wanted for the woman she'd started to become. For Danny the Mega O'Malley, epic could only be the one thing she'd never had. Normal. Then my heart sank as I remembered the condition of Dancer's heart. I got lost in my thoughts a moment, hoping she didn't... Well, surely she wouldn't be too... vigorous. Danny was super strong. She vibrated when she got excited. Oh, I really needed to stop thinking about this. I shook my head to scatter images and said to Raiden, You did the right thing. You should never have been her first. He looked at me like I was absolutely insane.
Of course I shouldn't.
Then his face hardened, and something I couldn't define stirred in his ancient eyes.
I'm going to be her last.
Without another word, Raiden shifted into the beast and was gone. Deleted scene from High Voltage. Before I began writing the novel, I needed to see the decision Raiden made to leave, to fully understand the emotion and motives behind it. I wrote this scene between him and Barron's to flesh it out in my mind.
What are you waiting for? Raiden demanded. Jericho Barron's paced the flagstones with such violence, his boots kicked up stone dust with each step. I don't think this is a good idea. Raiden said coolly, I didn't ask you to think. Just do it. And if we need you? Baron's whirled on him so sharply that the fabric of his long coat cracked like a whip. It's 5 years. The corner of Riordan's mouth lifted in a mocking smile. Surely you can muddle through without me for so short a time. In Faerie with Mac, it may pass as a mere month or two for you. Time crawled in that liminal space where the ancient Fae held formal court. And if something goes wrong, you haven't thought this through, Baron snarled. Riordan arched a brow. He'd never been accused of that before. He considered every detail, often looking centuries ahead, patiently recalibrating. Linchpin theory was his specialty. He who knew how to destroy a thing, a person, a society, controlled it. Have you forgotten who you're talking to? I'm talking to the bloody idiot who thinks something like this is a viable option. Baron snapped. I've taken precautions. Dany will be safe. She's not our only concern. There's also Dagus. Lore will get word to you if he scents wind of the tribunal. You know where to find me. Time also seemed to move more slowly in that strange, terrible place the tribunal dwelled. A lair they'd never been able to find. It might be decades before retribution came slamming down. He'd sometimes entertained the notion that the tribunal deliberately took their time, allowing the offending member of the Nine to think they'd gotten away with taking a human. So when that person was stolen from him, it cut deeper. Then again, it might be never. There had always been 10 of them. The tribunal had only ever come when that number was exceeded. With Barons's son dead, they might never come. This bloody well isn't the answer, Riordan, Baron said impatiently. I killed for no reason and not to feed. I don't take life without a reason. There may be little to distinguish us from the Fae, but that's one of the defining characteristics. You had reason. I'd have done no less. Riordan smiled mirthlessly. And scatter a trail of bodies behind her? She doesn't look back. There is that. But one day she will, and hate me for it. She protects the innocents. She doesn't kill them because something pisses her off. You don't know he was innocent. He wasn't. But according to her rule book, he didn't deserve to die. You didn't kill Dancer. Riordan's gaze shuddered. That was different. She'd loved Dancer. Tenderness had accompanied the erotic images bombarding him through their bond, soothing his beast just enough that he had been able to get himself locked in a cell beneath Chester's, barricaded in, with Lore, Fade, and Castillo standing guard beyond. Dany hadn't felt emotion for the man he'd ripped to pieces, just a hunger in her bones to not be alone. To have a man's arms around her and pretend, with eyes closed, he was the one who'd died in her bed. To feel what Dancer had made her feel. Cherished. It hadn't worked. The man hadn't returned what that woman was capable of giving. Elysian passion had been met by dumb plebeian lust. And then when she'd stopped, the bastard tried to take what he hadn't deserved in the first place. She left emptier and more alone than she'd gone in, and the grief she'd suffered deep in her soul had decimated the chains on his beast. He refused to litter her life with corpses. Barons eyed him stonily across the room. Riordan stared impassively back. He knew how much it cost his older half-brother to be here. He'd sworn to never set foot in this place again. After an interminable length of silence, during which both realized they would sit there for a small eternity before either broke eye contact, Barons spun away and fired over his shoulder. There's another option. Tell her what... No! Riordan snarled. It's not her problem. It's mine. She needs to breathe. live on her own terms, define herself. Not in opposition, but from choice. No boundaries, no limits, not one bloody cage. He knew Danny. If he told her, she would either curtail her activities to accommodate it, or cut the tattoo off, again, as she had in the Silvers. Neither was acceptable. Freedom was something she'd never known. He wanted her drunk on it. But Danny asked you to tattoo her. She didn't know what she was asking. I offered it as a weapon, a shield. She wanted protection, nothing more. A pause then. Silver eyes, icy, Riordan said, I'll kill again. That's my problem, not hers. Long ago, they'd run as beasts, obeyed no code, known no laws. They'd been a breath away from becoming no better than the immortally bored, monstrous Fae. Barons had pulled them back from that edge, shaped them into savages with a code that kept them south of monstrosity. On the rare occasions one of them slipped, Barons and Riordan did whatever was necessary to reclaim him. Divided, they were quick to abandon the canon that functioned as a conscience, protected their secrets, and ensured their prosperity. Barons enforced the law. Riordan kept them together. None of them had violated their code in recent centuries, but Riordan had butchered unprovoked, goaded by primal, uncontrollable rage at a situation, not the man he'd killed. He could carve the tattoo from Danny's skin. He hungered to escape the brutal intimacy of their bond, an intimacy she was unaware of, didn't realize worked the way it did. Yet, if he sliced it from her flesh, he wouldn't be able to find her if she got lost. He'd sworn to her that he'd never let her be lost. He'd sworn it to himself. Their bond was his guarantee that she would never face danger by herself again. Danny O'Malley had been alone in all the wrong ways and none of the right ones. Imprisoned as a child, she'd been unable to choose even the simplest elements of her day-to-day survival. He'd micromanage the hell out of her if he remained in his current imbalanced state. He'd do irreparable harm. She'd done her time in a cage. He'd do his. If she does get lost, Baron said finally. Riordan said nothing, just leaned back against the bars and folded his arms behind his head. Barons knew if Danny used the spell etched into her phone and flesh, nothing could stop Riordan from being sent to her, not even what his brother was about to do to him. He'd also given him instructions that if she called him at all, which would mean she was ready, Barons was to set him free. "You'll starve down here," Barons goaded. "I'll slaughter up there. The years will bring madness. I'll deal with it. You'll still feel it all." Again, Riordan said nothing. There was nothing to say. It was true. He would. But he wouldn't kill again. "You could get trapped in the beast skin, be unable to change back." Barons pushed, his eyes sparking crimson as he recalled another day, another time. "Unlike you, I prefer my human skin. I'll find my way back. It's dark. Underground." Barons knew his past. "That was a very long time ago," Riordan parried with soft menace. "It'll be hell." "I know what hell is, Barons. It's not this." A small slice of hell, however, was taking a man's life, merely because Danny had taken him to her bed. A larger slice of hell was knowing he'd do it again and again. The fairest portion of hell would be the contempt in her eyes. "Do it," he told Barons. "You owe me." Before he started to lose control again and decided he was fine killing them all. Before he convinced himself the active caring and concern for the well-being of another person's body and soul as she'd once informed him love was, scorn and fire flashing in her eyes, justified eliminating all intimacy but his. After a long silence, Barons murmured, "When we first transcribed that spell, we knew the mere placing of it would call high price. It's not your fault. You gift her with the greatest protection you can give, the willingness to abandon everything, to turn into the killing machine she needs anytime she needs it. You accept sacrificing your sanity and life each time she summons you. You grant her immense control over you and open yourself to a bond that can be pure poison for us. And the mere placement of that mark loosens the restraints on your beast. It's an unavoidable side effect." Again, Riordan said nothing. Civilized for eons, disciplined, iron-willed, he'd believed he could handle it. Nothing rattled him. But that woman. "We suffer incarceration no better than the Fae. It'll hurt." "Worse than being burned alive," Baron snapped. "Pain is relative. What if 5 years isn't long enough?" "It had better be. She's mortal." 5 years wasted. 5 years of her life Riordan would never get to see. And it would be the second 5 years of her life he'd lost. A decade total. He inhaled sharply, going rigid as curved black talons exploded from his fingertips. He slammed his hands into the floor, gouging deep gashes in the stone. His skeleton was suddenly too large for his body, his muscles shifting and elongating. She was on fire inside, angry about something, and he felt it. He felt everything she felt. That was the problem. He wanted her to taste all the world had to offer, gorge on it, then choose him, because he was the best the world had to offer. To the most lawless of men, choice was golden. It didn't matter what you were, it mattered what you did with it. "Do it. Now." Baron sighed, acknowledging this was one of those exceedingly rare arguments he wasn't going to win. "Our cuffs connect us. You have but to demand I release you, should you change your mind." And because of their cuffs, Barons would feel his pain, bear it in silence and never speak of it. Riordan dropped back on powerful black-skinned haunches with a low, guttural growl. "Ah, brother," Barons muttered a string of curses in a language long dead, but inclined his head and closed his eyes. When he opened them again, they were blood-red pools. Intricate tattoos slithered and moved beneath his skin as he chanted the words of an ancient spell. Riordan began to scream. But the day came when the only sound that filled that hellish place was the tortured baying of a half-mad, starved beast in endless pain.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of High Voltage by Karen Marie Manning, performed by Amanda Lee Cobb and Jim Frangione, directed by Lewis Milgram. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.